Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between. This is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to our radio show. This is called Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Scott Clark. We thank you for joining us on this day. We come around here about this time each and every week to discuss with you about addiction and recovery, a subject that not many people discuss on the radio, but that's why we're here. This is reality radio. These are true stories of people who have become addicted, people who have become victimized by addiction. There are so many numbers across this great land of ours and around the world who are affected by addiction. That's why we're here, to talk about it, to get it out, to talk about the truth so that we can maybe understand a little bit more about addiction and about recovery, about how we can come out of this. We emanate from our broadcast studios here in New York City, all across this great country of ours, and around the world on American Forces Radio. To that end, we thank our soldiers, our sailors, our Marines, and our airmen for helping to keep us safe each and every day and for listening in on Steppin' Out Radio. All right, here we go. We have a special guest. Mark is with us. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Scott. How is it?
Good. We've been talking, we talk each and every week about a particular addiction, whether it be drinking, other drugs, and believe me, drinking, alcohol is a drug. We want to tell you, it's not because we're just pounding this home, it's because it's a fact. Alcohol is a drug. It's a substance that people can abuse. And we have talked about different addictions, overeating, undereating, gambling, smoking. But this particular subject is about being addicted to the addict. It's an interesting subject and one that we really are glad to be talking about in this show because it affects so many people. The people who are involved and affected by an addict, by a person who is out there drinking and or drugging or suffering from another addiction. Mark is one such person. We begin at the beginning. Mark, what are your beginnings?
Scott, it started very simply. My adolescent son at the time got arrested. It was my first indication that he had a problem for possession of marijuana. Figured it was a minor problem. He was experimenting, something all kids do. He winds up going into a pre-treatment program at the courts. The court said, you stay clean, your record gets erased. I said to him, you know what, we're going to start drug testing you. And he says to me, Dad, don't bother wasting your time. I said, why? He says, well, I've been smoking. He says, it's going to take, you know, a good month for it to get out of my system. He didn't last a month before he got arrested a second time for possession. Now it's pretty obvious to me that we've got a problem on our hands, mm-hmm. and we begin the process. The process begins in an outpatient program. I walk in the door the first time. And I start to look at the insanity that had become my life in dealing with his problems, dealing with the schools, dealing with the courts, dealing with the police, dealing with therapists. And it was getting pretty crazy. And as I walked into that first meeting, the therapist turned to me and said, well, what are you doing for yourself? I looked at her like she had two heads. What do you mean? What am I doing for myself? Who has time to deal with me? I'm dealing with a 15-year-old who is completely out of control.
Right. My 15-year-old.
My 15-year-old who's completely out of control. And I didn't understand the process. I didn't understand that what I was seeing in front of me was not normal behavior for a 15-year-old who was experimenting. I kind of figured it out, but I never knew the extent of what was going on. He began with the program. And in his early stages, it's, can you stay clean for 30 days? And he went through this early intervention program. He stayed clean for 30 days, and he went out and celebrated as soon as he got out of the program, and he went and lit up a blunt, a joint. And it started all over again. And now he goes to the next level of treatment. Make a long story short.
So as the testing went on, though, I imagine it continued, though, if he'd been busted twice for possession.
He The most bizarre part was on the second possession. He went in front of the court, and the court said to him, and I almost fell off my chair, if you're going to smoke, do it in your basement.
Who said that? The judge?
The judge said that. My head almost exploded. My wife and I looked at each other, and it was one of these incredible experiences that you have. Here it is. You're trying to have the book thrown at your 15-year-old.
Right. Gently. Thrown at your...
Well, at that time, it was gently, and sooner or later, he would have to come to understand it was going to get a lot worse than before it got better.
Mm-hmm.
It was bizarre. It was surreal to hear this experience. So along the path, we came into line with a number of issues. He's duly diagnosed. He has mental health issues as well as his addiction, which came first, the chicken or the egg. It's the mental health side came first. For others, it may be different. But we had to deal with all of these issues. And over the course of what I experienced, we were dealing with, before he finally made the decision to go in, there were 11 programs that he was in between psychiatric inpatients, drug inpatient and outpatient treatments. And he finally decided to get his act together when we made the decision to put a boundary in place. And that boundary was very simple. And it took us a long time to get there, though. And that's part of where the story comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't understand that I needed to set boundaries for him because I thought that I could control him. I thought by giving him money, I could control him. By taking away privileges, I could control him. I thought that I had the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't.
I am powerless. Hallelujah.
Yeah, well.
How many times do we hear that on this show? Eventually, I am powerless.
That is such a critical point to get to, not only for our addicted loved ones, but for the family members as well, because we are codependent on their addiction. We are addicted to them. We enable their behaviors. We rescue them. We make excuses for them. We bail them out of jams. We'll call and get them arrested and then go and hire the best lawyer to get them out because of what we just put them in. Now, if that's not sick thinking, I'm not sure what is.
Now, let's go back to your upbringing. Was there alcohol, drugs in your upbringing at all?
Did not have any experience with drugs or alcohol in my family of origin. Mm-hmm. My son is adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And not that that makes any difference,
right.
But we did not, on either side of the family, we did not have experience. We did not know what we were dealing with.
Did you go out and have a few beers in high school?
Hey, you know what? I had beers. I've had my share of going out and getting drunk, and I'm not proud of it, but it didn't cause me a problem. I didn't need alcohol. I didn't do drugs. That's not where I am from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. I don't have the addiction. I don't have that allergy. And so for me, it was a phase, and I could walk through that very easily. For him, he began when he was 13. And as we've gone through his history, he became what was known as a garbage can junkie. Mm. I mean, he would use everything and anything he can get his hands on. Mm.
And you know what? It really doesn't matter if you did or didn't, because we've seen it on both sides, people who are addicted – people who are recovering, parents who are recovering, who have a son or a daughter who start to have problems, and they don't look at it as their problem in that they look at it as, well, I can take care of that. But they forget the whole program when it comes to their kids.
The program is very different because society tells us the following, Scott. As parents, we're held responsible for the behaviors of our children. The reality is we don't have that control. The minute they leave the front door, they're going to do what they're going to do regardless of what we think we can do to control them. That's where we get into this insane thinking about trying to control. And so we're on this hamster wheel of trying to control. We yell, we scream, we shout, then we play that good cop, bad cop. My wife's playing good cop today. I'm playing bad cop. And he's playing this wedge of addiction, trying to split us in the middle. And every time he does that, now he gets the two of us fighting, and he goes on his merry way out partying and having a grand old time. He's getting sicker.
we're getting sicker.
Along the path, I was completely insane. Stressed out. It was affecting my work. It was affecting my family life. It was affecting my relationship with my wife. He's our only son. I had to find a way of getting, of getting my life back under control.
Only child, no daughter.
Only child.
Only child.
Only child. I had to get my life back under control. We had to get our lives back under control. And along that path, I was fortunate to find the program Families Anonymous, which is a program for family members of those who suffer from the disease of addiction. It's a 12-step program. And in living that 12-step program, I began to find the path to finding peace and serenity in my life among the chaos and the insanity that was his. I had to learn along that I was powerless over him, that I was powerless over his choices, and that I didn't have to own the outcomes of his behaviors. And that is a huge wake-up call for a parent. Because the school calls you and says, hey, Johnny's acting up in school again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you want me to do? You've got him. He's under your control. What do you want me to do with him?
But they're so gun-shy there. And they'll say, well, it's the parents' job. We're here to teach, but it's the parents' job to teach this child how to live correctly. Right?
Right.
So you have back and forth, a catch-22.
Absolutely. And the problem is that the system, the school system, is ill-equipped to handle and understand what to do with it because it's time-consuming. It takes special focus and special attention, and they have 28, 29, 30 other kids that they've got to deal with mm-hmm. other than little Johnny who's got his drug problem, and he's creating havoc in the classroom, and you're getting the phone call.
Our special guest is Mark, a member of Family Anonymous. Families or family?
Please.
Families Anonymous, an interesting group, a self-help group, just like so many of the Anonymous programs. All of them. This is Steppin' Out Radio. This is what it's about. Steppin' Out. I'm Scott Clark. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppinoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. Steppinoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppinoutradio.com.
Welcome back to Steppin' Out Radio. Scott Clark with you, along with our special guest, Mark, who is a member of Families Anonymous, people who are addicted to the addict and what they can do, what they have to do to deal with this addiction to the addict. If you think that you may have a problem with this, because there are so many of you who are out there, I'm sure, mothers, fathers, even brothers and sisters who are affected by a person who is suffering from a disease, whether it be alcoholism, whether it be other drugs, addictions, and you are affected as well. That's what we're talking about today. Families Anonymous. If you think you need some help or know of someone who could use some help, go to our website, www.12stepmeeting.com. That's www.12stepmeeting.com. When you're there, you can sign up for our free newsletter or drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. On this day, we're hearing from Mark, who has a son who was going through addiction, and he and his wife and his family is trying to deal with it and finally found that, what, you were powerless over this?
We found that for us, we had to do something. It was killing us. It was killing our relationship.
What was it doing to you and to your family and to your wife and to your family?
I'm going to give you a prime example. When you get a phone call from your school that your son is threatening suicide, come pick him up. Or you get a call from your wife that your son is out of control and he's punching walls and making holes in walls. Or he's raging. this disrupts a family. And what happens is that typically we're embarrassed to make the phone call. We're embarrassed to pick up the phone and dial 911 and get the help that we need because we think it reflects badly on us. What are the neighbors going to say? The police are pulling up. The ambulance is pulling up. The house is surrounded.
Bad for us, but bad for the child, too, for the most part. You're thinking about the child, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. What is it going to say about him?
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that we're protecting our addicted loved ones. Now, it doesn't matter if it's a parent we're protecting or a sibling you're protecting, a spouse, significant other, a grandchild, somebody in the family who has an addiction. We're protecting them, and we think we're helping them. And what we're doing is we're getting in the hole and helping them dig their bottom deeper.
Enabling.
The enabling part of this is what it's all about. And that's what we think we're helping, but what we're doing is we're robbing the self-esteem from the addicted person. We're not allowing them to experience the natural and logical consequences of their choices. We're saying to them, you're not capable of living life on life's terms, and we're going to live it for you.
Mm.
Now, that's a terrible message to send to anybody.
Oh, and this is different than enabling a child to go about taking actions that could end up being addictive. As a parent saying, yeah, I'll go ahead, drink in the basement or put the party on. At least we can keep our eye on them. How many times have you heard that?
Scott, it's one of the most frustrating things that those of us who have dealt with the problem of addiction in our families recognize. When you have well-meaning parents who say, I'm going to have a party, put all your keys in the bowl, and if you're too drunk to go home, you're not taking your keys. That's not the answer. That's not the answer. The answer is there's a reason for having a law at 21. And it's not because I'm stuck in the 18th century. The reason is that the brain doesn't develop until well after 21. Chemical addiction tears holes in the brain. It's a brain disease because it affects the brain chemistry. And when you're dealing with an adolescent, as what we were dealing with, and you have these scenarios going on in your life, it just compounds the situation.
And I'm sure you've heard so many times people saying, well, they're going to do it anyway, so we might as well at least protect them.
You're not protecting. You're enabling. You're creating the scenarios. Sure, not every kid who's going to pick up a beer is going to get to become an alcoholic. And not every kid who's going to pick up a joint is going to become a drug addict. But you know what? There are enough kids out there who are. We look at the numbers of when I look at the number of people who are parents, siblings, who are victims because their loved one is an addict, it's frightening because we don't know where to turn. You know, I've often said about when I came to Families Anonymous, I had to find it. You know, I went through other Anon programs. They weren't for me. I didn't make the connection. But I made the connection in Families Anonymous because these were people who were experiencing what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to show me the path that I needed to go on to straighten my thinking out. And by changing the dynamics in my thinking, you change the dynamics in the relationship. You know, the saying is, nothing changes if nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
We had to make the change. And so making the change was allowing our son to get into trouble and deal with the trouble that he got into. And finally, it came to a point when he got to his 18th birthday, we made it very clear. We love you. We can't do it for you. And if you choose to drink and drug, we're not telling you can't do that. We're just telling you if you choose to do that, you can't live in our home any longer. That's a really difficult space to be in. Because as parents, as loved ones of addicts and alcoholics, we are deathly afraid that they're going to die from their disease. And you know what, Scott? They're going to die from their disease if they don't find recovery. Because there's only three possible outcomes, as we all know. Jails, institutions, and death, and not necessarily in that order. But what I came to learn and understand through the program was those exact same outcomes are waiting for us as parents, as loved ones of addicts. Because stress is a killer. Heart disease is a killer. We will get into fights with our addicted loved ones. People will die from the insanity if we don't step back and find a space for recovery and work a program.
For those who are affected, by the addicted child or the addicted brother or the addicted sister
or the parent,
wife, parent, whoever it is, can also come institutions and death.
And jails.
From the same thing.
Absolutely.
And you haven't had one problem. Well, not one addictive problem, except the addiction to the addict.
Correct.
So what did you do when you finally got help?
What I did was learn to step back and allow my son to do what he was going to do. I would offer him the opportunity to find recovery, but he had to make the choice. I wasn't going to chase him into recovery. He had to say, scream out from deep within his soul, reach out to his and say, I can't do this anymore. And that's exactly what happened, Scott. The day he called us and said, I'm done, he had a $450 a day cocaine habit. He was really not long to continue. His therapist, his doctor all said he was in a very bad way. He said,
sliding towards death.
Towards death, absolutely. He was living on the street. He wasn't living in the home anymore because we would not, I could not stand by and watch him kill himself one day at a time. I wasn't going to do that.
And how old was he at that time?
He was 19 years old.
19 years old. We'll be back and talk more with Mark about that time, what led up to it, how he had to let go, and then how long it took at age 19 and what it took to send the message to his son. Stepping out. We'll return right after these messages.
Aren't these stories of addiction and recovery inspiring? Wish you could share them instantly with friends or even relatives? You can with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app. It's available for iOS and Android phones and tablets. Share that episode in an email, Facebook post, or tweet with a single tap on your screen. Download shows to your devices and listen while working, jogging, or lounging. Prefer a podcast? Steppin' Out Radio is on Google Play, iTunes, and many other podcast platforms. Go to steppinoutradio.com to subscribe.
Welcome back to Steppin' Out Radio. Scott Clark along with our special guest, Mark, who is has been suffering from an addiction to an addict, who is recovering one day at a time from his addiction to an addict. If you just joined us, Mark had an only son who began getting into trouble at age 13, smoking a joint, possession of marijuana, and then the progression continued. And so did the problems for Mark and the rest of his family members. From that point, when you were at what we call the bottom, and believe me, there's so many of us who are grateful that we hit a bottom, because there are some people who just never get the bottom and they end up in institutions or dead. What was that like at the bottom? He started at 13. How old was he when it was the bottom for you? Not for him necessarily, but for you.
We reached our bottom by about the time he was 17. We had put into place, we had gotten the program. We had begun to find our recovery. We had been to already a number of inpatient programs that he had gone through. We had been through the parent education sessions at those programs. We had heard the stories. And we understood what it was going to take. Now, understanding here in your head and getting it here in your heart is a long distance. That it might as well be across the ocean, because we're afraid that they're going to die. We believe that we have the power to save them from dying from the disease, and we don't. I've seen just as many kids die in the streets as they've died in their homes from the disease. And it's this false sense of security that we as parents, as loved ones have, that we think we can protect them in our own homes, where we can't protect them on the street, and that's not true. So what happened was we began to understand how the process worked. We began to understand that we needed to change our reactions to him, not engage in there, to set boundaries.
And he's still living at home.
He was still living at home at the time. Mm-hmm. He had just gotten out of a 90-day program. It was just about New Year's. It was Christmas time. He went out to a New Year's Eve party, and he came home plastered. It was literally days before his 18th birthday, and we said, we're done. We're done. We can't live this life anymore, and we won't.
How long had you been going to meetings?
Well, at that point, we had been going to meetings for about a year and a half, mm-hmm. and we were working our program. Just like the addicts, I have a sponsor. I worked my 12 steps. I sponsor other people. I found the program. I understood finally what my role was in it. I understood what the 12 steps meant to me because it changed my life. Not just my life in dealing with my addict, but it changed my life because there is a different way to live.
It has been said by many that the 12-step program may be the best gift that America ever gave the world, and that you do not have to be an addict to live your life through these 12 steps. Some people think it's a cult. Some people think it's a sect. What it is basically very simply a self-help group that helps you to say you're not alone. Everyone needs help. And this is the way you can deal with life.
It's wonderful. It really is. It's a great gift. And there are, I am grateful every day to the program because it has changed my relationship. It allowed me to allow my son to make the choice to find recovery and change his life. He struggles. We all struggle.
How has it changed your life individually, or has it?
It has dramatically. I am a lot calmer than I ever was. I was by my training, I was somebody who planned the future. I planned for emergencies. I planned for disasters. And that's what I was dealing with in my life. I was dealing with disasters, and I was frustrated because I had all these plans, and none of them were working for me. I've learned to accept it for today because I don't have any control over yesterday. I can't change what happened yesterday. I have no guarantee that I have tomorrow. I've got today. And living in the moment is really a freeing experience because you don't have to worry about the insanities and the what-ifs. I don't have to pay interest on money that I've never borrowed because that's what you do when you worry about the future. You're paying interest on stuff that you're never, ever going to deal with. And if you do, the interest that you paid isn't going to help you get through that. You're going to need that energy. You're going to need that energy because this tears at you and it tears at families and it rips the fabric apart. The greatest story, and the way I knew I was really sick, I was making a change from my PDA to my phone device and switching my calendar over. There was a period of time for 2 years, Scott, that every single day, for a two-year period, there was something dealing with my son's addiction, whether it was dealing with a school or dealing with the courts or dealing with a lawyer or dealing with a physician or a therapist or program, every single day. Phone calls at the office, phone calls from my wife, me calling her, disturbing her at her office. It is insanity.
And then came the time just before his 18th birthday when Mark's son came home drunk, and that was that. We'll talk about what happened after Mark drew the line. Here on Steppin' Out. We'll be right back.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppinoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. Steppinoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppinoutradio.com.
Can't be scared when it goes down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind is who's gonna run this town tonight.
Welcome back to Steppin' Out Radio. Scott Clark along with Mark, our special guest, as we have been talking about being addicted to the addict. And then came the drawing line, came the point. You got into Families Anonymous, Mark. Your boy is almost 18, comes home drunk. And then came the line. What happened?
We said, this is it. We're not going to live this life anymore. You have a choice. We're not telling you can't drink or drug. We're just telling you, if you choose to drink and drug, you're choosing to find another place to live. And we told him he couldn't come home. That was the first time. That was the toughest 30 hours of my life. I reached out to everybody I knew, including a counselor of his from one of his rehabs. And I said to the counselor, I said, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. And he gave me words of wisdom. And my sponsor gave me words of wisdom. And I got through it. And saying no is the most difficult thing the first time. There would be two more opportunities for me to practice that before we cut it and said, this is it, we're done. And that was the important step for him, because when we did that, he was allowed to make a choice as to what lifestyle he wanted to live. And when he decided it wasn't fun anymore, that's when he said, I need to change what I'm doing. You know, we come to understand that the only time those who are chemically addicted, or any of us actually, will stop doing the same old thing is when the pain of staying the same is more than the pain of changing. In one of his rehabs, there was a sign on the wall, and it has stuck with me since that point. Growth will not happen until I value facing the truth more than I value avoiding fear.
What happened when you said you cannot live here if you're going to do that, and you're gone? So he's going to go? Did he leave?
He left. He left. He stayed in his car. He slept in his car for a while. He couch surfed with other friends. He wound up losing his car. Sold that to his dealer to pay off his drug debt.
Did he ask for money?
For me? Yeah, he asked for money. We weren't supporting the money at that time. We had been giving money, supporting through various ways. Things were missing in the house. You know, things were stolen. He was finding his ways of supporting his habits.
But when you make that decision, when you finally say you cannot live here, that doesn't just mean you cannot live here. You're not going to get anything from us.
Oh, there's no support. That's it. We're done.
And you have to stick to that.
You have to stick to
that. I've seen so many times where a person says, okay, you're out, to the kid, because they've had it. And then they come back. They come crawling back. Or they say, okay, but you need money for that, so I'll give you that. Have you seen that?
Scott, not only did I see it, I lived it. You know what? Our addicted loved ones hear us. They understand us. They don't believe us. And rightfully so, because we keep moving this line back. We draw this line in the sand, and we move it back. And we draw the next line in the sand. I finally had to draw the line in the concrete. And that's the only thing that worked for me. This was it. And you know what worked for me? My sponsor said to me, one day when you get done hitting yourself in the head with a brick, you're going to wake up and realize it hurts a lot less if you don't do that every day. And I stopped. I wasn't fast to learn. I went through this for a number of years.
And it's hard.
It's hard because it tears at you, because it's your kid. It's your loved one. You want in the worst way for them to find recovery.
And he wants in the worst way for you to give in.
And that's all he's looking to do. He wants to continue to party because the disease is lying to him. I don't have to tell those who suffered, who have found recovery from the addiction themselves. They know when the disease is lying to them. They know. And especially, you know, we were talking a moment ago about those who are themselves in recovery and how that – I talked about institutions, jails, and death. Just think for a moment. For those who are in recovery themselves, how they jeopardize their own recovery when they have a son or a daughter who's suffering themselves now from the disease of addiction, what it does to the strain on them and on their program. Because what happened is we take the focus – all the focus, the spotlight is on our addicted kid or our addicted parent or our addicted sibling. And we put ourselves second. We put our health second. We don't see doctors. We don't go to hair appointments. We don't go to the gym. We don't work out. We don't do any of those things.
We get too hungry.
We get too hungry.
Too angry, too lonely, too tired. All of a sudden, you're walking towards a drink.
That's right.
Or a drug or whatever you're doing.
That's right.
Or another drug.
And that's exactly the point.
So when you put the foot down, you and your wife put the foot down and stuck to it. how long did it take? And it will vary because all addictions, all different people, all different stories. How long did it take before?
Took about another year.
Another year.
I mean, but it was back and forth. It was a boomerang back and forth. You know, he'd come back in, he'd work a program, he'd go to meetings. But he'd go to meetings stoned, high, under the influence of something.
So you had to set your parameters, and if he didn't stick the parameters, he was back out again.
He was gone, and that was it. Finally, we said the revolving door had stopped, and we said, this is the end of the game. We're done. We can't do this. We can't live our lives. You're killing us, and I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to do that anymore.
And I'm not going to watch you die.
And I'm not going to watch you kill yourself one day at a time. From that point, we became very involved in our own recoveries. We understood the program, that what it was taking to make us, and that we could find recovery, we could find peace and sanity in our lives, despite the unsolved problem of our addicted loved one. We loved him, but hated the disease. It's okay to do that. I don't have to like your behaviors, but I can still love you. But I don't have to love you to death.
These are choice words, and so important for any parent who sees their son or daughter drinking and or drugging to excess. This is Steppin' Out Radio. We'll be right back.
Aren't these stories of addiction and recovery inspiring? Wish you could share them instantly with friends or even relatives? You can with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app. It's available for iOS and Android phones and tablets. Share that episode in an email, Facebook post, or tweet with a single tap on your screen. Download shows to your devices and listen while working, jogging, or lounging. Prefer a podcast? Steppin' Out Radio is on Google Play, iTunes, and many other podcast platforms. Go to steppinoutradio.com to subscribe.
Welcome back one more time to Steppin' Out Radio. Scott Clark with you, along with our special guest, Mark. We have been talking about being addicted to the addict. www.familiesanonymous.org. If you're listening to what Mark has been saying, if it hits home in any way, if you're struggling with your child because of his or her use of alcohol and other drugs, check this website out. There is help. www.familiesanonymous.org or www.12stepmeeting.com. That's ours. Mark, what's it been like what's it been like for you and your son?
Scott, before I came here today, I spent 4 hours with my son, just walking around the city, having a talk with him, father to son talk.
How long did it take for him to finally come back and say, I'm done with this?
He went long term. He went out to a program out west and spent 11 and a half months in the program, went to a halfway house for another 6 months before he asked to come back east. When he came back east, he did not move back in with us. He stayed with us for a very short time until he got himself settled. He's now living on his own, working in the city. And trying to put his life together.
And he was out for a little over a year in that struggle when you finally put the foot down?
From the time we said, that's it, yes. It was about a year from start to finish.
A year of struggle, of terrible pain for you and your
life. It was agony for all of us, for him as well. He was in pain the entire time as well.
You're with him, you said the other day.
I was here today. On my way here, you know, he left just a short time before I came into the studios this afternoon.
What's it like with him now? How is he doing? And what's it like with you and your family?
We can talk. He feels very guilty still, and he's still dealing with his issues. He understands what he put the family through. Hopefully he'll grow through that. And as he works through and matures and finds his path, that may happen for him. We have forgiven him for what he is, for what's transpired. We understand it was the disease, not him. We love him, and we will love him, regardless of the choices he pick. We may not like that behavior. Today, I could spend the whole day with him, go out to lunch, have a pizza together, sit, walk, enjoy the outside. something that we couldn't do for his entire time. And he's very remorseful and sad over the fact that he lost his entire adolescence. From the time he was 13 to the time he was 19, he was drinking and drugging. He was completely out of his mind. He doesn't have those growth years.
There are alternatives if you're young and you're listening to drinking and drugging. It's living life on life's terms, one day at a time. Thank you, Mark, for joining us on a very special show, FamiliesAnonymous.org. I'm Scott Clark. We'll see you next time, one day at a time.